the metaphysics of sensory experience. Let me just start by delimiting my topic. I'm going to be quite focused in this talk. I'm going to be interested in the nature of the conscious properties that constitute our sensory experiences. I think sensory experiences are states of people. I think states are a matter paradigmatically of particulars having properties. So when I have a sensory experience, it's a matter of me having a property, a conscious property. I want to know about the nature of that conscious property. When I hear something, see something, feel a pain, and so on. Now, a lot of people are interested in this subject because it has implications for epistemology. They want to think of experiences as providing reasons for beliefs, and others are worried about it's making possible the ability of thought to refer to objects in the world. I'm not going to look at any of that. I'm just going to look at the metaphysics of what's going on when we have conscious sensory experiences. Okay, if you read the abstract, I'm going to look at a number of theories. There's direct realism, there's sense datum theories, there's representationalism, and there's my own theory. In fact, I'm going to spend most of the talk, in a way, talking about representationalism and what's wrong with it. My own view will kind of fall out by contrast with representationalism. I'm not really going to say very much about direct realism or sense datum theories, but I'd just like to start off by kind of getting them on the table, because I will need to refer back to them at various points later on. So, the direct realists, this junctivists, have a pretty straightforward answer to what's the nature of the conscious properties we have when we have sensory experiences. They think of them as relational properties. They think of them as a matter of a subject bearing a relation of perceiving to an actual fact. There's a lemon on the table, it's yellow, there's the fact that that lemon is yellow, and I have the relational property of being in the relation of perceiving to that fact. And that's what constitutes our conscious sensory experience. Our consciousness lights up in the way it does when we see the yellow lemon, because we're in relation to the actual yellow lemon out there. Now, some people find this a very strange view, and there's a kind of incredulous stare sometimes directed at this disjunctivist. Do you really mean to say that you think my conscious feelings are constituted by things outside me, on the table, you know, maybe further away? And do you really think I couldn't have the same conscious property when I was having an illusion and the lemon wasn't yellow, or there wasn't a lemon there at all? Well, that's exactly what they do think. That's not really an argument. It's just saying you don't like the view. I think there are more serious difficulties for this view, which I'll just mention in passing. I think the time lag argument is a difficulty for this view. I think there's something odd about thinking about my consciousness stretched out in time, which doesn't really apply when you just think about it stretched out in space. That's kind of all right. But stretched out in time, we don't think of consciousness as stretched out in time. So there's a problem there. Adam Peltz has a set of considerations that put pressure on direct realism. His thought is that the similarities between conscious sensory experiences don't seem to match the similarities in the objective world, but rather the similarities in the brain space that underlie the conscious experiences.
Sorry, that's the fourth one. It's a rehearsal.
Is this real?
It's not real.
Okay.
It is real, but it's not a...
So, Adam...
Not in the scary sense.
Okay. Adam Pouch says, think about the experience of red and green. Very, very different. But in fact, in terms of reflectance profiles, red and green are as close as you get to reflectance profiles. But the neural activity is very different. So he says the conscious properties must depend on what's going on inside the head and not what's outside. And of course, there's the challenge of explaining illusions, what's going on in the case where I have an experience as of a yellow lemon, but there's no yellow lemon there. Disjunctivists can't say you're having just the same kind of experience as you normally have when you've seen a yellow lemon, because they don't think that experience is possible in the absence of the LLM. So they have a problem in explaining illusions. Anyway, that's direct realism. I just wanted to get it on the table. Ditto's sense datum theories, they also have these conscious properties as relational, but now a relation of perceiving, scare quotes, a special kind of relation you have to this sense datum, which is present not just in the good case where there's a real young there, but the bad case as well. So they're well placed to explain illusions, unlike the direct realists. They have a common factor across the two cases, the good case and the bad case. In both cases, you're in relation to a sense datum of a yellow lemon, which might not correspond to a real one. But the problem with sense datum theories, as is familiar, it's hard to find room for sense data, the objects of our perception, in any sensible ontology. So the difficulties facing these theories make an awful lot of contemporary philosophers in this area attracted to a representational view of sensory experience. So now conscious sensory properties are rather more complicated. They're the property, when I have an experience as of a yellow lemon or anything else, I'm instantiating the property of representing there to be a yellow lemon in front of me. But in a certain mode, anybody who runs this line is going to have to say, well, not just any representation, I might think that there's a yellow lemon in front of me, that's not going to give me the lit up technicolor feelings. I've got to be representing it in the sensory mode. And some people want to appeal to even more fine-grained modes. Tim at one time was attracted to a version of representationalism which has it. Is that right? Well, you want some representationalist, is that? So I can see something to be square and I can feel it to be square. And it's not the same feelings, but in both cases, according to representationalists, I'm representing there to be a square thing. So why does it feel different? Well, because in one case I'm representing it in the visual mode, and in the other case I'm representing it in the tactual mode. So representationalists need to bring in modes to explain what kinds of representation constitute these sensory properties. But then once they've done that, it looks quite attractive. There's no problem about explaining what's going on with illusions. I'm representing there to be a yellow lemon there in the illusory case just as much as in the critical case. And they don't have the problem of sense data because where do they fit in? Because they aren't bringing in sense data yet. They've just got, I'm representing there to be a yellow lemon. It doesn't require there to be anything that actually is yellow in the vicinity, any more than writing there's a yellow lemon on the blackboard. If there was a blackboard, it would require there to be some yellow object around. You could represent without on the face of there being some such object. Okay, so that's representationalism. Now, I'm going to say representationalism is really a bad theory. It's terrible. I suspect some people. So Jeremy's a sensible fellow. He's at the back, and I feel like Gussie Ficknottle in Right Ho Gee. There's Jeremy. And he emailed me before. He said, "You're not going to argue against representations, are you? Surely representations are sensible to you." And I need to be clear about exactly what I'm arguing against, what I think and don't think. About 4 or 5 years ago, David Chalmers and David Bourget did a survey on what do philosophers think. And one of the topics was perception, and you had to take where you direct realist. And 5 years ago, direct realist, sense data theorist, representationalist. I took representationalist. Of course I'm a representationalist. And that's because there's something that I do think. I do think that conscious sensory experiences are representations. I have no doubt about that. The direct realists and the sense data theorists might well deny that, but I don't want to deny it. I think of conscious sensory experiences as cognitive states that cognitive in the general sense that that inform me about the environment and enable me to behave in a way appropriate to the environment. To that extent, I think of conscious sensitive states as absolutely representational. I think a lot of cognitive neuroscience wouldn't make any sense unless you recognise that sensory experiences were representational. But I can think that without thinking that the conscious properties in question are essentially representational, and a fortiori, without thinking that they're constituted by their representational powers. Perhaps an analogy will make the point I'm making clearer. Think about the words there on the blackboard. Think of them, think about the sequence of words as marks on the screen of a certain shape and colour. Now take it, there's no doubt that those marks are representations. They have a semantic content. They're saying something there. I mean, they're not quite factual statements, but suppose they were. I mean, they're true or false depending on how things are. They're representations. But considered as marks, typographical entities with certain colour and shape, they're not essentially representational. Just those same marks could have represented something different in a different language. Perhaps they do represent something different. They might have represented nothing at all. I mean, it's only in virtue of contingent facts about the way those marks are used and responded to by human beings that they represent what they do. It's not essential to their typographical nature that they represent as they do. That's my view about conscious sensory experiences. I think they're like the typographical marks. I think that in my experience, there's a whole lot of shapes. I mean, I don't take the shapes and colours literally. I mean, there's a whole lot of things in my experience, and as it happens, they represent things in the external world. But not just because of their intrinsic nature as conscious experiences, but because of certain further facts, which are only contingently connected with the experiences themselves. So, my view is that I think conscious sensory experiences are qualia. So there are people who talk about qualia, non-representational features of sensory experience. But most people who do talk about qualia think that there's a few little qualia in sensory experience, and for the most part they involve representational properties. I think it's all qualia. I think there's nothing intrinsic representational in experience. I'd quite like to have a name for my view. I've been struggling for some while to come up with a good name. I think today I'll just call it the typographical view to highlight this analogy. But if anybody can think of a good name, please tell me. I've talked about vehicle representations sometimes, that the conscious properties are constituted by the nature of the vehicles of representation. But that's not a very good view, because my view isn't, in the terms at issue here, a representational view at all. It's a non-representational view. Okay, so now let's look at representations, and the view I'm going to try and persuade you doesn't work at all. So, I'm going to start by talking about people who come at representation, and hence representationalism, from a naturalist perspective. So they want to explain representation as something that goes on in the natural world, perhaps goes on in organisms other than human beings. They think of it as kind of brain states that enable animals to track the environment and behave appropriately. And if you have a naturalist account of representation, then a rather attractive program opens up. You can explain representation in naturalistic terms, and then you hope you can explain consciousness, or at least conscious sensory experience, in representational terms, and now you've got a naturalist account of conscious sensory experience. But in fact, I think this package is a very strange package indeed when you look at it in the cold light of day. Think about how a naturalistic account of experience, in fact, gets spelled out. Natural way to think about it, well, there's vehicles of representation. Natural way to think about them is the brain states, arrangement of neurons, sentences in the language of thought, something like that, some kind of syntactic arrangements in the head. And then they co-vary with features of the environment. You get a certain thing comes on when you rabbit and you see a fox, or when you're a human being and you see a yellow lemon, and so on. So there's some co-variation between states of the head and features of the environment. And perhaps it's important to understand what's going on, that these internal states guide behavior in a way appropriate to the feature of the environment. And there's a whole bunch of theories that say, well, once you've got all that, then you've got naturalistic representation. So there's causal theories, the brain states represent what they cause, or asymmetric dependence theories, as in Fodor, which kind of soup up the causal theory to deal with various problems. And then there's various theories, success semantics, two-day semantics, signaling semantics, that emphasize more the way that the brain states guide the behavior. But they all have this rough idea that there's a kind of correlation between a brain state and features of the environment, in virtue of which the brain states represent features of the environment. Now, I think if you think about representation like that, it's very, very odd to think of sensory experiences as constituted by representational properties, in particular representational properties of the brain states. So now we're saying that what makes my consciousness light up in the way it does when I have sensory experience is that I've got a brain state that in my history, or perhaps in my evolutionary history, or perhaps in the general environmental context I'm in, is correlated with certain features of the environment. And that's what makes it feel yellow. I mean, even if, suppose I'm a contaminant that's not yellow, it's green, right? But I'm having an illusion of it's being yellow. What makes it the case that I have the yellow feeling is that the brain state I'm in is generally correlated with yellowness, even though in this case there's no yellowness around. I think that's far too abstract and relational a property for it to be plausible that that's what makes the brain state feel like it does for me. I mean, if you're not convinced, I mean, there's quite a lot of arguments that follow on from this. I mean, one thing that follows from the fact that representation is being thought of in this naturalistic way is that the truth conditions, the representational content of the brain states will depend not just on what's going on inside the individual, but on their environments. You'll get intrinsic identicals with different contents. That seems to imply they'll be differently conscious, and there's a whole lot of literature about that. But in fact, I think all that literature is scratching at symptoms. One can focus the issue more directly and not worry about, as well as she does, exactly what are the contents we're going to ascribe to these brain states, but focus on the question of whether they're representational at all. The cosmic swamp brain thought experiment focuses the issue. Imagine out in interstellar space, by complete quantum fluke, there's a nice warm vat assembled with a molecule-for-molecule duplicate of my brain with all the right inputs and outputs for about 20 minutes, suppose. Cosmic swamp brain. Now, I'm going to take it that from a naturalist point of view, not necessarily from any point of view, but from a naturalist point of view, the states of the cosmic swamp brain don't represent anything. They're not correlated with any environmental features. They don't represent anything any more than the words N-E-W-H-A-M produced by the wind blowing on a hill in Mars represents this place here. They're just in the cosmic swamp brain, the neural states don't represent anything. So they have no sensory, they have no representational properties. So according to the naturalist package we're looking at now, they will have no sensory properties. But that seems wrong. It seems natural to suppose that the cosmic swamp rain will be consciously just like me, even though it isn't representing anything. So I'm just using this thought experiment to highlight the odd commitments of the naturalistic representational package. Perhaps I'll just say the underlying point again. It seems very odd to say that what makes the brain state lineup, as it does for me, where I have sensory experience, is facts about the historical and general correlations and features of the environment. That seems peculiar. Okay, I've been talking so far in naturalist physicalist terms. The vehicle representation is a brain state. But in fact, I think the physicalism isn't essential to the point I'm making. I think the same worry should arise even if you were some kind of dualist. You thought, well, there's the brain states, and in addition, there's something extra goes on and we get consciousness. I think even if you think that, you should be suspicious of the idea of the conscious properties that constitute representationally, if you're thinking of representation naturalistically. It's one thing to say that there's some extra stuff going on that's conscious. It's another thing to say that its conscious nature derives from systematic relations to an environment. I mean, that would require you to say that the cosmic swamp brain doesn't have conscious nature because it doesn't have systematic relations to environment. As long as you hang on to naturalist theory of representation, it's not clear that the internal conscious properties, which I take the cosmic swamp brain to share with me, are going to be representational. Okay, that was all saying how representationalism goes wrong if you're thinking in representation in naturalist terms. And some of you might be thinking, well, that's where the problems come in. Maybe you're not going to get a good representationalist theory of sensory experience if you start off thinking of representation naturalistically, but perhaps we shouldn't be doing that in the first place. And perhaps now we've brought in the idea of conscious goings-on that are somehow over and above, not reducible in some sense or other to brain states. That gives us the possibility of a different way of thinking about representation that will make a representationalist theory of sensory experience fly. So that's what I'm going to look at in most of the rest of this talk. How far have I got?
23 minutes, about halfway.
Halfway. I might even be going too fast. I'll digress a bit, I'll tell some jokes. So, I don't think that while a number of representationists about sensory experience are officially naturalists, they combine their representations about experience with a naturalist theory of representation. I don't think they're really driven by the naturalist theory of representation. I think that's an add-on that they'd like to have if they can. But what really gets them going, and here I'm thinking about naturalists like Chaim Gretzky, is something they share with an awful lot of non-naturalists who also have a representationist approach to sensory experience. There's a whole bunch of people who've been united by Uriah Kriegel under the heading of the Phenomenal Intentionality Research Program, and they start off with the idea that there's something about the nature of conscious states, in particular conscious sensory states, that makes them representational independently of any connections with environments and so on. Even the cosmic swamp brain would be representing, they say, in virtue of the intrinsic nature of their conscious states. So how does this line of thought work? Well, for many people, it starts with the observation that sensory experience is transparent. So the idea here is, well, we're all having sensory experience now, And now I invite you to reflect on the nature of your sensory experience. Pick the nature of the experience you're having when you're looking at me. Say, look at my jumper, right? Really think about what's going on with you when you're seeing my jumper. And the thought is that all that happens is that you look harder at my jumper and its colour. All that happens is you attend more strongly to the worldly blueness that's instantiated by my jumper. So here's a well-known quote from Michael Tai. He's talking about looking at the Pacific Ocean like Cortez, but Tim keeps saying it's a slightly bad example because he's looking at the blue sea, but we all know the sea's not really blue, it's only reflected by, but put that to one side. He said, what I found so pleasing when I focused on the nature of my experience was the blueness of the sea. Not any feature of him, but the worldly property, the objectual property of blueness. And Harman, in an influential paper in 1990, hinges a campaign for representationalism on this transparency thought, that only features you can turn your attention to when you concentrate on the nature of your experience are features of the tree. Okay. So that's a thought. I'm going to query the thought in a while that what happens when you focus on the nature of experience is that you focus on worldly properties. But let's run with the thought for a while. And it's worth spending a bit of time on it because it's not as obvious as it might seem at first. Note that the representationalists can't say what the direct realists, the disjunctivists, say. They say that what's going on when you have a sensory experience is that there's an actual instance of blue. Let's go back to the lemon, yellow in front of you when there's a yellow lemon, and it's your acquaintance with that property instantiation, the fact involving the actual lemon and its yellowness that lights you up, and if you want to focus on that, well, sure, you can focus on the yellowness that the lemon has. But representationists like Tai and Harman are common factor theorists. They think that exactly the same thing is going on in the bad case, where there isn't a yellow lemon, there is a green lemon or no lemon, but still you can focus on the yellowness. And I think that's suddenly very strange indeed. So here I am, I'm looking at a lemon that's in fact green, but I'm having an illusion as of its being yellow, and I and Tom would think, right, I can now focus like mad on the yellowness. This being a property that lemons have, nothing to do with people per se, it's properties that would exist even if there hadn't been any people. But how so? I mean, in this case, the lemon's not yellow. I'm not yellow. My sense experience isn't yellow. There's no yellowness around. But still, somehow, I'm able to glom my mind onto yellowness, and that's what makes me light up with the feeling that I have. Now, it's not like this consequence has escaped these philosophers. They just happily embrace it. There's Dretske. You're hallucinating pink rats. They're these properties. But we're not aware of any object that has these properties. We're aware of pure universals, uninstantiated properties. And here's Michael Tai, along with most of them. I'm happy to say that in hallucinatory, the perceiver is conscious of an uninstantiated property. This seems to me part of naive common sense. I'll restrain myself from any cracks about Michael's view about common sense. So I find this all very strange. There's quite a pile of questions one might ask at this point. The idea is that somehow I'm aware of this property. I'm going to instantiate. So it's up in... We have all kinds of different views of properties, a lot of them, but I don't think that matters too much. But different views of properties will have different implications about where uninstantiated properties live, but they're kind of not obviously in space and time, or at least not around here necessarily. And so, what I mean, I think if you're aware of something, you're probably aware of a fact, but what fact involving this uninstantiated property can you be aware of in your sensory experience? I mean, presumably, we need some other relation that I have to the uninstantiated property. Now, as I'll say in a second, I'm not against the idea that there are some such relations that I bear to uninstantiated properties. I think there are. But it's a bit unclear to me how you can kind of get to be aware of the property. The property can be in your experience in virtue of those relations. There's another question. Perhaps other people have read more closely than me. Laura might have things to say here, but when I read Tai and Vetsky and Harman, they were quite clear how you get from the idea that the transparency observation reveals the presence of these worldly properties in your experience to the further thought your experience is therefore representing things to be thus and so. Maybe... So, I mean, I think the thought is something like, well, if worldly properties are in your experience, then and there's some kind of direction towards a certain region of space-time in front of you, well, then the thought is that your experience is presenting to you that that property is instantiated in front of you. But if that's the thought, I think it needs to be further elaborated, defended. It's not obvious to me that the mere presence of a property immediately constituted as representing itself to be instantiated somewhere else. So I'm not going to press on those questions. My difficulty is just a more general version of the difficulty I have with the naturalist theory of representation. I just find it very hard to take seriously the idea that some relation between me and an uninstantiated property, kind of outside space and time, or at least outside the local space and time, can possibly constitute the here and now feelings I have when I have conscious sensory experiences. Maybe there are some historic views that involve just such a thought, but the idea of the mind kind of grasping uninstantiated property and that constituting the feeling is a very strange one, which, as I said, I've got no further arguments here. I find it hard to take seriously. Let me be specific. It's not that I don't like the idea of me being in relations to uninstantiated properties. That's fine. I think my weak representationalism commits me to that. I think that when I have a brain state that represents, in virtue of environmental contingencies, there could be a yellow thing in front of me, when there mightn't in fact be such a thing. That's a matter of me being in a certain relation, rather complicated naturalistic representational relation, to the uninstantiated property of yellowness. But when I was talking about naturalist theories of representation, I said, surely you don't want to think that the here and now conscious feelings are lighting up are due to that rather complicated historical environmental relation. I'm now making just a more abstract generalization of that point. The less naturalist, transparency-driven representationalist might have some different account of the relation I bear to uninstantiated property when I'm representing things to be thus and so, but I still find it very difficult to take seriously the idea that that relation can constitute my here and now conscious properties. Okay. a bit of wrapping up. Tell you a little bit more about my own typographical view. I hope I've done something to persuade you that, look, I've got this nice, simple, dumb, old-fashioned view, and here's direct realism, very strange. Sense datum theory is even more strange. Representationism turns out not to be nearly as attractive as it looked at first sight. Shouldn't we just settle for my typographical view? Okay. One thing people often ask at this point is, isn't it just a version of sense datum theory? And to that I'll say no, it's importantly different as I think about it. So I have a conscious property, in a sense. It's a veil between me and the objectual things going on out there. Well, between, I'm not so sure I want to say that, because it's a conscious property and it's different from what's out there. It's not the sense datum view, because I don't think of myself as having any mental state directed on that conscious property. My mental states are directed on the world. I'm aware of the lemon itself and its yellowness. I want to say if we're going to talk in those terms, in virtue of having this conscious property. I'm not aware of this conscious property itself. I don't think about it. I don't have any mental states directed about it. I'll say with the vulgar, and quite naturally, I'm aware of the lemon and its colour. Sometimes, of course, I can have a mental state directed on my conscious sensory state. I actually think of this as something that goes on in thought rather than in perception. The sensory system, I turn my cognitive thoughts to the question of what's going on with me sensorily, and I can probably, in ways that need to be thought about, read off directly from something how it is with me sensory, so I'm capable of doing that. But that's a special case. I can be aware in thought of how things are with me sensory. But in general, when I'm not introspecting, I don't have any mental state directed on my typographical state. It's not that sensory experience always involves some awareness direction on that state. My view has a slightly odd consequence, but one that I'm perfectly happy with. Suppose I'm hallucinating, there's no lemon there at all, I'm experienced as of a yellow lemon, and I'm not introspecting. What am I aware of then? I mean, if I was a sense datum test, I'd be aware of the sense datum, but I say I'm not aware of anything. I mean, I have an experience as of a yellow lemon, but there's no yellow lemon there for me to be aware of. I'm not directing my thought at my sensory experience. My sensory experience is conscious, I'm conscious, but I'm not conscious of anything. There's no object of my mental state. Okay. What do I say about transparency? What do I say about the argument that the effort to attend to your sensory properties only gets you staring harder at the jumper? I think that when you turn your mind to how it is with you sensorily, you'll be aware of sensory properties that aren't objective properties in thought. But as I said, I think that's something that goes on outside the realm of sensation. And the transparency argument I see is just the observation that when I turn my mind to how it is with me sensorily, nothing changes in sensation. My sensory processes go on just the same. I have the same conscious feeling, despite the fact I'm introspecting. And what would you expect? I mean, why should the fact you're introspecting suddenly make your sensory systems work differently? Perhaps the transparency argument raises problems for views that have qualia, my kind of typographical properties, Ned Bott calls them paint properties, alongside worldly properties, objectual properties, in some sense in your experience. I think that's how Bloch and Peacock and other friends of qualia think. they're very keen on the fact that, in addition, say, to geometrical properties, roundness and squareness, which the worldly properties are experienced, when it comes to colours, it's a feature of the typography that makes us consciously as we are colour-wise. That's Bloch's view. And Peacock thinks that there's typographic qualia properties going with awareness of shapes. He thinks that with the rhombus and the square and the square footed on the side, you've got a subjective property in addition to the objectal property in your experience. So views like that, that have both kinds of properties in their experience, might have a problem in explaining why you aren't able to switch your attention from the objectal properties to the subjective properties. And there's a bit of debate, and they have various arguments about it. But that's not my view at all. I don't think there are any objectual properties in experience at all. I think it's all typographical properties. So when I try and attend to mine, nothing happens. Nothing happens. I just get the same typographical properties occurring. So I do admit my view is pretty counterintuitive. It's that, you know, this lived world of conscious sensory experience is all just sort of typography with no essential connections to things in the external world. Now I'll finish by saying a bit about the source of the contrary intuitions. Why does it seem so much to us that our experience involves worldly objects and worldly properties? And my explanation will appeal to the fact that a number of people have observed, Kotty Farkas has written quite a lot about this, Farid Mazrour at Wisconsin too. Experience itself has a very rich structure. It displays all kinds of constancies. As I'm kind of moving around and the light is changing and time goes on, still in my experience there's kind of stable elements corresponding to the word in my internal state that represents you. And that, I mean, there's a sensory field and it's got various stable points in it, and it's very natural to think of my visual field as itself containing objects, a bit like, as it were, the quasi-objects you might get in some space-time field as an oddity moves around through space. And natural to talk about those as objects and to think of them as having properties and relations and so on. But if we do talk about this, and I'm not against talking about this, you should realize that what we're talking about are just modulations of our subjective experience and not genuinely mind-independent objects and properties. But it's very, very tempting to slide between the two things, the things in our experience and the things in the world. Here's a characteristically honest passage from Brian Law, who agonized about these matters in his last couple of papers. And she says, look, imagine you're having one of the lived experiences without knowing whether it's veridical. You're strongly tempted to say that object. You seem both to commit yourself by using a demonstrative and to take it back at the same time. That object may or may not exist. Very natural thing to say. The phenomenology gives you the feel of a neutral object that might or might not exist. And then sometimes we discover that we're perceiving accurately, and it does exist. It does exist. I think this tendency is terribly seductive, and convinces us or forces us, pushes us towards the conclusion that objectual properties are in our experience. I mean, okay, here's how it goes. I mean, you introspect and you can be sure that the object in your experience is there. I mean, that lemon, that dagger, I see before me. And you can say all that while remaining neutral about whether it's real. And then you discover that it is real, and its yellowness is objectual yellowness. But before you knew that it was real, when you were neutral, you were pretty sure, you were not incontrovertibly sure, but a lot surer than you were that there was a lemon there, that it existed and it had yellow properties. But when it turns out to be real, it's got real yellow properties, so the conclusion is that objectual yellowness had to be present in your experience beforehand. Yes, this is the last. If I had more time, I would point out that talk of intentional objects gets run together with this stuff to make the mistake, the seduction, even stronger. I mean, Tim and other neo-Meinongians like Graham Priest say we need to think of mental states as having intentional objects to make sense of our talk about them, where these intentional objects might or might not exist. Now, Tim's not inclined to identify those intentional objects with the features of experience that I've just been talking about, but other people are, and that compounds the seductiveness even further. Okay, so I think that's muddle. The thing that you're sure to exist with its properties can't be the same as the real lemon and its properties, and the idea that that thing might or might not exist is a bad idea. It's one thing, it's a feature of your experience, and it can't be a mind-independent object. So I've been hitting the non-naturalist representationalists with the idea, I've been hitting their idea that the objectual properties are in the experience, and that's why the experiences represent. Maybe there's some other explanation of how conscious sensory experience is intrinsically representational, apart from its containing worldly properties, like yellowness and roundness. I haven't said anything about that. Maybe people have ideas along those lines. But it's a bit of a challenge for the representationists. I mean, we've got this idea there's the vehicle properties. I've finally brought in this asterisk, Chris Peacock's asterisk terminology, typography. There's the properties of my experience when I represent things to be yellow and round. And then there's the worldly properties. And what's the distinct properties? If you think of the distinct properties, it's not clear what magic can form an essential connection between them. A connection that will remain present even in the cosmic brain in a vat. So I'm given that inclined to risk with the typographical view. So there, we are finished.